Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Boothcast. Before we go over to the interview, just want to give a quick shout out to Vicobi's UV Ranger gear. As the heat comes in, Vicobi has an awesome lineup of UV gear to help you keep you feeling cool and performing at your best. The sun is, for most of us, the enemy. I've had a few moles cut out myself, and Vicobi works really hard to produce lightweight and highly functional gear for the ocean athlete. For surf ski and OC guys, the paddle range for the paddling shorts are super popular. Come in both men and women versions, and they keep your bum a little comfy, and obviously really high performance and functioning shorts. So if you want to find out more, www.vicobi.com. And now I'm going to throw you over to my interview with Maui waterwoman Annie Reichart. Hello and welcome to Boothcast. On Boothcast, I speak to people about sport, business, and the winning mindset. Today, I have Annie Reichart all the way from Maui, Hawaii. She is a SUP paddler, obviously one of the best girls on the scene at the moment, competing in the Red Bull Heavy Water. She's placed many times at the Gorge Paddle Challenge. She's also a big wave surfer now, which is pretty cool to be able to watch her charging out there. She's a foiler as well, a wing foiler, and she's a surfer, which is probably her first passion. So, Annie, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to see your face via Zoom.
Yeah, it's been really cool to obviously talk to so many people around the world, even though we can't see each other. It's good to be able to talk on this platform. So can you give the viewers and the listeners a little bit of a backstory about yourself and let them know who you are and what you do?
Yeah, so my name's Annie Reichart. I kind of have my fingers in every sort of different water sport there is. I think growing up on Maui, it's kind of easy to, you know, gravitate towards kind of doing a little bit of everything. So that's kind of how I started competing in stand-up paddling and surfing and foiling. And I think that's just kind of how it all began. And so now I'm lucky enough to get to travel and compete in stand-up paddle racing and surfing and all this stuff. So yeah, it's kind of how it first started.
And when you, well, obviously growing up on Maui, when did you start surfing? So I know that was your first passion.
Mm-hmm. Going to the beach, there's pictures of me like crawling. I used to crawl when I was younger, and I'd like steal food off of people's like picnic blankets at the beach when I was really little. And then, you know, after that got old, I think I kind of started, you know, surfing on the front of my parents' boards when I was 2 years old. And they'd put like floaties on my arms, and I'd go out and they'd hold me up on the front of their board. And then I think I was like 3 or 4 when they started like pushing me into my own waves, and I started kind of paddling myself out to the lineup and, you know, kind of starting to be independent in the ocean a bit more.
And where did you start surfing on Maui? Where, like, which part of Maui do you live in? Because I know there's like certain areas, like, I don't know if it's the northwest,
yeah.
Northeast, and then you got the south, and like obviously Zane lives a little bit south of you guys, and a lot of people live in the north, like near Paia. So whereabouts are you from?
So I live in Pukulani, which is, it's on the north shore of Maui. So it's like where Kai lives and where Cody and all of, you know, the water sports guys. And then Zane lives on the west side. So Pukulani is like upcountry north shore. So I'm about 15 minutes from the water on a good day with no traffic. So, you know, I grew up surfing, you know, the waves that were right in front of Kai's house and Hokipo, which is kind of all of our north shore home breaks. And then I think the wave that I really started surfing on, though, was a wave right next to Zane's house on the west side of Maui called Pu'umana. Every single Sunday, we would take my brother, my little brother, and then my mom and dad. We'd go over with another family, and we'd spend every Sunday surfing all day long. And I think that's kind of how I first, like, found my love for the ocean. Just, you know, my family just showed me how amazing it was to be out in nature for, you know, an entire day like that. And that's kind of how I first fell in love with surfing.
And what was it about the ocean that kept you coming back to it? Like, you obviously fell in love with surfing. Your family was obviously heavily into surfing as well. Mm-hmm. What was it about the ocean that kept bringing you back, and why did you enjoy it so much?
Yeah, I think I've always been a really outdoorsy kid from when I was really little, no matter, you know, if it was like, you know, exploring behind my house in the woods, you know, doing anything. I think I just found so much peace being in the ocean and being able to be in nature like that. And it's such like a raw, powerful place. And I was kind of raised on it. So it's something that I've had such a deep connection to from, you know, the age of 2 years old. But I think it grew up with me, and it's something that I'll never really be able to turn away from. It's something I'll always kind of need in order to function kind of on a normal level.
Yeah, for sure. And was it some, when you were surfing, did you constantly want to get better? Was it something about obviously being in the waves, and were you trying to obviously catch bigger waves and do better turns? Was that something that was ingrained in you early, or were you always just about going out there and having fun?
Yeah, well, I think my first mindset's always to go out there and have fun, because otherwise, what's the point in doing it? But I think I've always been competitive. You know, I grew up not only surfing, but I grew up playing soccer and volleyball and cross country and kind of, you know, all sorts of different sports outdoors. And I've always had, you know, wanted that competitive nature to get better and improve things. And for me, that was fun. You know, I loved that kind of drive to improve at the stuff that I did. And yeah, I think it kind of went from me just enjoying it, and then me realizing, like, wow, I really enjoy progressing and working on these things and working on doing better turns, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, it was just kind of the natural progression to really, like, me getting the point was like, yeah, this is fun. I love doing this, but I also love pushing myself and really putting my head down and grinding it out and kind of, you know, figuring out ways to improve.
And when did you first start paddling stand-up paddle boards? Because you said, I think it was around 11, and then you sort of really started taking it a little bit more seriously when you were about 13. You're 18 now. How has that process been, obviously getting into stand-up at that early age and obviously seeing a lot of different guys and girls around the place and in Maui, obviously using it as a stepping stone to a career where you can travel and race and compete?
Yeah, well, I think, yeah, when I was younger, surfing for me was just something I did for fun. And then when I first kind of discovered stand-up paddling, I was just kind of starting, you know, to pay attention to Kai, who for me was like such an icon, a role model. And then there's the Dave Kalamas and the Robbie Nashes, who, you know, on Maui were just kind of like the OGs and like the gods that kind of, you know, they ruled the island. So it was really cool to kind of be able to grow up and watch them do what they did. And so the first time I got on the SUP board, it was like, I think it was like a huge 10-6 board. Like, I was a really little kid and I was standing on a board that was like huge. I could barely turn it. You know, it took me like 10 minutes to paddle like 20 feet. Like, you know, it was tricky, but I kind of, you know, I loved it from the first day I got on it. And friends were getting smaller and smaller boards, and so I would just kind of keep borrowing smaller boards and trying them out. And you know, I loved it and I love surfing. So I think for me, just kind of trying something new was something I really liked. And then seeing guys like Dave and Kai just progress so fast at it, it really kind of, you know, got me excited and it got me really inspired to kind of see what I could do in that sense. And then I had friends growing up too, who also looked up to these guys that were so into this sport. And I know we were really motivated to kind of go out there and see what we could do. And so, I was like 12 or 13 at the time. And I was, you know, a little kid surfing tiny little waves, you know, and just enjoying it. And then it kind of, I started gravitating towards kind of competing. And I was like, wow, you know, I'm improving at this. It'd be really fun once again to kind of, you know, see on the competitive side, like if I still enjoy this. And from there, I kind of just worked my way up to like kind of competing on different levels. And for the SUP surfing side of things, it was such a huge sport when I first got into it. It was growing so fast. There was Izzy Gomez, she had won multiple world titles, and Kai. And so I think I was so kind of, you know, in awe of everything that was happening. I was like so inspired to just get out there and kind of, you know, see what it was like to like be involved in the pro circuit of sub surfing. And that's kind of how it all started.
Yeah, because it really sort of took off, obviously, with the APP World Series and then the World Tour. Or I'm not exactly sure what the name was back then. Now it's the APP. But what was it like looking up to guys like Kai and Dave and Robbie? Like, they were obviously setting huge like stepping stones for everybody coming after them. They were sort of like pioneering this stand-up paddling lifestyle and sport, and obviously allowing the stand-up surfing to really take off. And that was the first sort of stepping stone. And then it was like the racing took off after that. How was it obviously being involved with those guys, and why did they motivate you so much?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm so lucky to be able to grow up in Maui, having these guys kind of, I think a special part of it was I always used to go to this beach called Sugar Cove, which was really, literally like Kai's house is like right there. So yeah. I always used to run into him when I was going on the water. And I think just being on the ocean with these guys at the same time and kind of seeing what they can do, and just their, not only like their skill set, but just their mentality being in the ocean, which is, you know, if you don't love it, why are you out here kind of thing? Like, they always had so much fun every time they were in the water. When I was with them, we were laughing, having a good time. And so I just kind of watched them and everything that they embodied. I was just so in awe and so inspired by that. So that's kind of the feeling. It wasn't necessarily like a goal, like I want to be the best. It was just kind of a feeling I was after, as I want to go out there and I want to have the most fun I can have on, you know, all the different crafts I can have it on. And yeah, it was really cool because they accepted so many different sports too. I mean, Dave was windsurfing and Robbie was kiting and windsurfing and Kai was all these different things. So it was just, you know, cool not to see them just saying, you know, you can only surf, but they were like, you can do all these things and you can have all this fun on all these different crafts and, you know, you can enjoy it with different people along the way, which I think for me was really like, yeah, like, wow, they're really accepting of all of this and they made it look, you know, amazing just being on the water no matter what craft you're on. And so I think that's kind of where I was like, you know, these guys are the ones I look up to and this is kind of whose path I want to follow.
Yeah, and it's obviously been something that they've been able to create because obviously surfing really took off and it became sort of like the sport. Then there was this like hate against SUPs, or like there was like, it was obviously like not really a thing that everybody did, and like jumping in between different sports. I think Kai has really helped put that to the forefront as well now, and it's been really, really cool to see. And I think that's something that's really special about now in the water. If you're paddling or you're surfing or you're enjoying it, it's kind of like more about ocean sports than it is just about what you think you love. Whereas like we can all appreciate different aspects of the ocean now, and I've really enjoyed seeing that progress over time. But when you first got into stand-up paddling, when was your first race?
I was actually thinking about this the other day, and I couldn't come up with the exact like year. I believe I was either 13 or 14, but my first race ever was Olokai, because when I first started getting into racing, for me, like the entire attraction of it was downwinding, just because Maui is such a predominantly windy place. It's like, you don't have something to do when it's windy, you're never going to be on the water. And so that was kind of like my first touch at getting into a specific type of wind sport. And so, you know, the first downwinders I ever did, they were like a mile and a half long, like just the shortest little runs. I remember coming off the water like, wow, that was crazy. I was out in the open ocean. And then going from that to like 32 miles to me just like blows my mind. But I think a big part, you know, was I wanted a way to spend time on the water when it was windy. And so that's why I was like, wow, well, I have so much fun doing this. It's like catching mini bumps. I mean, you know, the feeling more than anybody. And that's what really got me excited to kind of like, wow, like, I kind of want to try this in racing and I want to compete in this. And so Olokai was in its heyday, and there was Connor winning every single Olokai, and Dave and Kai and all those guys. And then on the girls' side, there was like Andrea and Sonny, and you know, it's just, they were so skilled. And so I think for me looking at that, like, I'm like, wow, that's really cool. I really want to kind of experience what it's like to do a race like that. And so I think it was my first ever Maliko to Kanaha run, which is the Olokai race. And it was such an amazing feeling to be out on the water with like 200 to 300 people that year. I think it was like their biggest kind of showing. It was like an amazing feeling to paddle out of Maliko, a place I usually go out with, like I'm either alone or I'm with like one or two other people, but just to see so many people from all over. I know I talked to people from Australia to California who just came from all lengths kind of the globe, just to come and share this place that was my home, which was so cool to me. And so I think I did it with a couple friends. We were all similar. I think, you know, Jeffrey Spencer and Finn Spencer.
Yeah.
But we grew up together here, you know, in Specklesville. You know, they lived down there, so I was always on the water with them. And that's kind of how we first started seeing Kai and Dave and those guys on the water. But, you know, I did the race with them and we all kind of fell in love with the sport because we pushed each other into it a little bit more. Like, I think there was a competitive nature between the three of us. And so we all kind of got onto it at the same time. So when we first got into Olokai after that first race, we realized like, wow, this is, you know, this is amazing. This is what we want to do. We want to kind of pursue this. And that's kind of when I first got my touch for like SUP racing. Cause at first it was SUP surfing, and then SUP racing kind of slid in there and kind of took like my main priority.
Yeah. And it's obviously the Maliko run is such a iconic run for stand-up paddling. And I guess a lot of different ocean sports, you get to train on that quite regularly. What is it about that run that really gets people psyched? Like I think I went there in 2017 for the APP event there, and I actually never got to do it. I never got to do it for a proper downwind. It was actually flat. And I was like, I think I was one of the only guys. So you talk about Connor, like one of the only guys to beat Connor on that run because it was flat. Like I wouldn't have beaten him obviously.
Yeah. But I think that was one of my worst Maliko runs, that race.
Yeah, yeah. It was quite funny. Obviously, we went there for a downwind and ended up being flat. And that's just part and parcel of racing and what we do. And in sport, you just never can choose your conditions. And if it's on that day, it's just on that day. And
exactly.
But yeah, what is it about that run that everyone loves so much?
Yeah, I think, you know, Maui, once again, it's so windy all the time, especially in the summer months. So I think it's also the wind just blows perfectly down the coastline for a perfect 10-mile run. It depends. There's like different places, but I think the ultimate Maliko run is from Maliko to the harbor, which is about, I think it's like 9.8 miles. So everyone just says 10 miles, but you know, it's a straight shot. You paddle outside of Maliko and you turn down the coast and you just go straight downwind. You know, there's no side chop or cutting upwind like the end of Molokai to Oahu, where you have to paddle upwind for 2 miles. It's like, it's just straight down, perfect bumps, and it's like blue water, sunny skies. So I think, you know, it's such a special place when you're out there and you can feel it. And I think there's so many races that have happened there over the years too, from Olokai to, you know, there's like other smaller races. I think it's been built up, and there's also a huge place not only for stand-up paddling, but for OC and for six man, and I see surf skis going out there all the time. So think it's just kind of a really cool place for the downwind community of Maui to like get together and kind of share this one run. And in my opinion, I might be biased, but I think it's by far the best run, downwind run, anywhere in the world.
Yeah, well, I'll have to get over there and see it in its full force. But yeah, I've seen a lot of good times to come down that run, so I'd really like to get over there and spend some time. I was going to come over for a month this year, but obviously everything's just evaporated and disappeared. So
I'll
get
It'll
over
happen.
There.
We'll get
sure.
you out there.
Yeah, I hope so.
Foil, maybe.
Yeah, well, I've been foiling over here in Perth. There's a lot of ribbonweed here, which is a bit annoying, but because obviously it becomes a bit of a handbrake. But no, I've been really enjoying the foiling. It's been really, really fun. And obviously just learning that new skill and getting that just new perspective on the ocean has been really, really enjoyable. But when we're talking about downwind races, obviously you've done Molokai. Have you done Maui to Molokai as well?
I have. I've actually competed in that race 5 times.
Okay.
It was really cool. The first time I ever did it, I believe, was 2013. I think I did it on a team relay, actually. It was 2015, my bad. So I did it in 2015, and I did it first time ever was on a relay team with 2 other boys, and we were, I think, you know, I was young at the time, and it was such a daunting task to go out there and say, like, yeah, we're gonna, you know, splitting it 3 ways, but we're gonna go and paddle 27 miles. I was like, there's no way. And then the next year I actually did it solo for the first time. I think I was 14 when I did it solo, and so for me that was like so exciting. I was like, wow. It's kind of a run you don't get to access a lot unless you do it for a race, just because most of the time, you're not going to go out there and paddle by yourself between a channel, between islands. It's not the safest thing to do. But I think for me, that specific channel I have so many good memories, so many, you know, grueling, brutal memories, and scary at times. So I think it's kind of a really special channel for me. It's definitely a lot easier to do than Molokai to Oahu. I learned that. But every year I've paddled it, it's just been kind of, I know I've learned more about the bumps and about the lines to take and just kind of more about the channel itself, because I did a 3-person relay, and then I did from there on out, I've actually only paddled it. I've never foiled that channel. But I did it on 14 up until last year, which is the first year I ever did it on an unlimited board, which was amazing. I had never really competed on an unlimited board until I got one of, I think it was Travis's 2017 or 2016 winning M2O board. It was like a dugout, and the thing just was a rocket. It was amazing. So I think that really also changed kind of my whole outlook on channel crossings, like just how fast you can do them on a sub board. That was, you know, it was so amazing to be out there. And I think, what did you do M2O last year? Was that your first year doing it?
That was my first year on the sub.
So, I mean, you experience it too, just like how wild it is being out there on a board that's made for those conditions. Because for the longest time I was on, I did it 14s the entire time until last year. And the 14s I had were really small and they didn't have much rockers. So, you know, I kind of overcame the frustrations, but so much of the time, like the noses would poke on the water and it'd be so frustrating and be mid channel, like, this board's so annoying. So I think it was really cool to kind of, you know, finally get to be on a board that I felt like really was suited for those conditions. And that was a really cool feeling. And then, you know, that channel is also so special too, because the specific races I did, you actually don't need an escort boat to compete in the race. So I did the race. I think I've done the race the past 3 years without an escort boat. And for some people, that's really daunting. And it definitely is. Like, I think it was 2 years ago, I got out there in the middle of the channel and I didn't see a single person for 20 miles. Like, we started the race and it's crazy how you think like, okay, it's a race of 150 people. I'm going to see people the whole way. But everybody within like 10 minutes, they're so spread out. And, you know, you have like double overhead, you know, open ocean swells coming through. You can't see anybody. It's pretty wild. So I was alone from mile, you know, like 3 all the way to mile like 25. It was crazy. And you get to the end of it and I'm like, did I come in dead last? Did I come in first? I don't know where anybody is. And it's just kind of wild, you know, starting a race and being out there kind of in your head the whole time, because you really, you're completely alone. Like, if you need help, I had a phone and I had a radio, I could, you know, I could call for help. But, you know, you're not out there battling it alongside. For me, in those experiences, I know Connor and those guys, they were always, you know, leading and they were close to each other. But for me, there not being as many girls and me just kind of being in, you know, a specific part of the pack where I wasn't really next to that many people, I think it takes a really specific mental game to be able to kind of say like, I'm completely alone. I don't know if I'm in first or last, but I kind of just have to like put my head down and give it all I have and just kind of see where I come out, which is different than most races where you're in a draft train with someone and you know exactly what you're doing and what place you're in and what moves you're going to make, versus like being in a channel and having no idea what's going to happen, whether, yeah, you're in first or the wind's going to die or it's going to go offshore, or just kind of, you know, being at the mercy of the ocean, having to kind of hold on for dear life and see where it takes you.
I think that's something special about the ocean in general. Like, you go into those races and you start with, yeah, like 150 people or 400 people, mm-hmm. or whatever it is. And you can find yourself alone or only being able to see one person very, very quickly. And it's quite a daunting task sometimes. But it's something special as well, because you're out there and you realize you are just racing against the elements and you are just going mm-hmm. out there to compete and do your best, because you can't affect, like, you're not racing in a pack. You can't like control what anybody else is doing. You can only focus on yourself, catch the bumps the best you can. And it was cool to hear you talk about the unlimited, because it just changes the game when you're catching downwind bumps.
Yeah, it's so much fun.
The 14 just becomes such hard work. Like, it is fun, but like, especially if you do something like Molokai to Oahu, when you're having to basically cross chop, cross swells, like you mm-hmm. are able to get big, nice swells, but you've got a lot of the time be cutting. And I've heard the Maui to Molokai is much nicer, it's a bit more straight behind you. So I was hoping to get a race this year as well, but we'll see.
Next year, there's always a next year. It'll happen.
Yeah, I hope so. And what was it like? Obviously, you haven't done the Molokai to Oahu on the Unlimited or the 14, but mm-hmm. what was it like foiling it for the first time, not last year, the year before?
Mm-hmm. Well, the crazy thing was, I did Molokai to Oahu 1 year. I think it was 2016, and then I missed 2017 and then foiled it 2018. But I competed on a 3-person relay with a couple with 2 other boys, and we were really young at the time. And so it was amazing to kind of go out there. And I think it took us like 6.5 hours. It took us a long time to make it across, but kind of getting to experience the power of that channel before I went out and foiled it was really cool to me, because I kind of knew kind of what I was getting myself into. We were on a 14-foot board, which I think is, between that and a stock prone, is by far the hardest thing you can do across that channel, and probably the slowest too. So for me, kind of getting to, you know, dip my feet in the water and see what that channel's like, and then, you know, 2 years later getting to go and foil it was really cool. It's something I wouldn't have expected, but I'm really grateful that I was able to kind of, you know, see what exactly I was doing with that, you know, with the channel before I did foil it. Because for me, I was actually going into the 2018 year, I'd planned on paddling at 14. I wasn't going to foil it. I had been foiling, but for me, it was just something I did it because it was so fun, and because, you know, I had become good friends with Kai, and then our friend Cody Kerbox, who used to race all the time. The three of us would do it together constantly. And for me, it was just something I loved to do, and it was so fun. And I never considered it as like something I would compete in or really do super seriously. And then, you know, I'd been training nonstop 14 foot for M2O that year. And then Kai was like, you know, maybe you should think about foiling it. I was like, no way. Like, you know, I'm not up to your level. I never will be. There's no way I will even come close to finishing that race or competing in it. And I think I'd started downwind foaling like 3 months before M2O. So, yep. You know, I hadn't had that much time or experience with that. And I was like, there's no way. And the farthest foil, like amount of foiling I'd done before M2O was a 10-mile harbor run. That's it. I hadn't done a double run. So I went from 10 miles in the harbor to the harbor, which is, you know, a perfectly groomed bump run, which is, you know, as easy as it gets to M2O, which is like, you know, as you've seen, which anything can happen. Like, you know, the seas are crazy. They're coming at you. They're coming from behind, sideways. You just have to, you know, be ready to hold on for dear life. So I think for me, I really had like, you know, I did not expect to foil it. And then I remember it was like 3 days before M2O. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to paddle it. Like, you know, I'm going to go out there and do what everyone else did. It's like, that's how Kai did M2O for the first time. He started on a 14-foot board. And I think that's probably how Connor did it too. It's like, you know, you got to work your way up. And I was like, next year, hopefully I'll do it on a 17. And I got a call from Kai and he's like, I really think you should bring your foil stuff with you. He's like, I think you really need to do it. I think, you know, you could be the first girl to ever do it. Cause it was 2018 was the first year they ever let foilers into the race.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, maybe. I'm like, it can't hurt. My equipment was so small. I was on like a 7.0 board and I had a foil, and you know, it's so easy to travel with. I was like, well, if I'm bringing a 14-foot race board, maybe I'll throw that in just in case. And then I remember like flying over to Molokai, still not sure what I was going to do. I was like, you know, I had talked to a couple people and I was, you know, really convinced. I was like, I want to foil it, but I don't know if I should, because I had made obligations to other people that I was going to paddle it. And then I kind of got there and I was watching the bumps as I was flying from Molokai, or I was trying from Maui to Molokai, and I kind of made a decision. I was like, you know what, I'm gonna go for it. Like, I just kind of had this like whole like, you know, realization. I was like, if I have only this one chance to do it for the first time, and it was the first time anyone was gonna do it, and so I was like, well, if they're guinea pigs too, I might as well be with them. And so I think I switched, like, before you have to register the night before and kind of like do your final sign-ins. I think like 15 minutes before they closed everything, I came and I was like, wait, I want to switch my entry if you guys are okay with that. And, you know, I think they kind of looked at me like, does this girl know what she's getting herself into? Like, it's kind of far. And yeah, the next morning I woke up and I think I've like never been that nervous in my entire life. I was like, yeah. I really hope I can make it across this channel, because, you know, not only was I probably, in all honesty, underprepared, but I think my equipment was not up to par with what it should have been. I was on an old board of Kai's, and then I had a super heavy foil and a mast that was pretty short, which I'm sure you know, when you overfoil, you just go flying and just have it paddle in one direction, you in the other. And so I, you know, I woke up that morning feeling like, okay, well, I'm going to go out there and give it my all. Cause for me, I think, you know, I had like grown to love foiling so much. I was like, I want to go out there and see exactly how far I can get in this race. And it did take me 5 hours and 20 minutes to do. But at the end of the day, I did finish, which for me was amazing. And I think the first time I did it, you know, you don't exactly know how long 32 miles is until you know, reach the finish line yourself. So when I was doing it on the 3-person team that one time, I didn't really, you know, I didn't paddle it the whole way. I didn't really experience the full course of the race. But doing it on the foil, I was like, wow, this is, you know, I experienced everything from the grueling start, which on the foil, I had to paddle most of for like the first like 5-10 minutes, just because I couldn't get into the bumps. And then at the end, paddling upwind for 45 minutes, you know, it was really amazing. And I was so happy I did it and so happy I finished. But I think it was one of the worst races I have ever done. And also the best races, one of the best I've ever done, just because I went through like an emotional roller coaster the entire time, which I think I fell like 10 times during that race. And I was like, I don't know if I can finish. Like, multiple times in my head, I was like, this is crazy. Like, I'm like 10 miles in, I've fallen 4 times. I don't know if I can keep going. And then, you know, I kind of just continued being like, you know, 1 mile at a time, keep working, keep getting back up, keep going. And then I made it to where I saw the finish line. I was like, I'm this close now. I definitely can't stop. I just kind of got to put my head down and get there.
Yeah, so that's pretty incredible. So you're 16 at the time and you're pretty much well underprepared. You'd only done a 10-mile run and basically probably had a similar preparation that I have for Molokai most years. So I'm usually racing on a stand-up paddleboard 14 through Europe and then expect myself to be able to do well over 32 miles all of a sudden. And it's really, really hard way to do it. I've seen Connor do it a few years and I could feel his pain sometimes when he'd go over there and try and race underprepared. And it just hurts a lot. But it must seem really cool feeling to obviously get to the finish line. Your equipment probably wasn't the best. It would be nothing to what you would be using right now because that has just progressed so much. Yeah,
it's crazy to see the difference in equipment. It's wild.
And what is the difference in your equipment now? Like what type of like foils and stuff are you using? Like how big are they? Like because obviously when we first started, we were using like, I don't know, I guess hypernut shapes. I don't know, like those big square nose bores. And like Kai and Connor, I remember seeing them like cutting their like race boards down. I was talking to Kai about that the other day. And
yeah,
the big like low aspect foils, and they were just like massive. And that was was fast. But now it's like they've all gone pretty high aspect. The masks have obviously gotten longer. It's been a cool process to be a part of, and I'm lucky to be working with Starboard Foils. So I get lots of toys, and it's really, really fun process. But how has that been for you? Because like you would have just seen your times and everything just like increase and get so much faster.
Yeah, no, it was really amazing to kind of get to watch the evolution, not only of surf foiling, which, I mean, that has changed so much, but especially in the downwind foiling, because, you know, I think downwind foiling is based purely off of speed. So your main goal is just go as fast as humanly possible. And there's really a balance with that, with the wing side. So yeah, what I was first, I was riding a Nash foil, because at the time I was sponsored by Nash, and it was an older foil and it was an older board and it was really heavy. The entire setup was, you know, hard for me to carry. And, you know, it proved itself very tricky over 32 miles and it was a short mast. And so I think, you know, how the equipment's evolved is we've gone smaller, which has really helped with speed. Because I think, you know, you want to go as small as you can possibly go with wing size to the point of, you know, just barely you can get up and out of the water and kind of start going.
Yeah.
And then we've also adjusted the length of the mast too. Like once I said, like when you're going and you only have like a 70 centimeter mast, and you hit a bump weird, or you're going over a bump and you don't have enough space, you have a lot less room for error versus if you have a little bit longer mast. You have more room for mistake almost, and you have more room to kind of play with your speed, because the higher you get out of the water, the faster you're going to go with your foil. So I think that's really helped kind of progress downwind foiling, because you know, the easier it is to keep up and going the entire time, the more speed you're going to maintain, the faster you're going to go. And then I think also a huge part of it was the boards, because we were all starting off on these huge boards. I mean, for me, a 7L was really big. And then, when Kai first started downwind foiling, he was, I think he started on a 12.6 and he cut off a,
This is what you would have been on.
That was my first downwind board. Yeah, that was a 7.0. It was an old one of Kai's, and it was super flat.
And this is doing, the first Molokai, right?
That was the first one ever, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been just, I can just imagine. And this was like obviously crossing the channel on the boards, and how much it's changed. You look so like, obviously you're probably a bit more skilled than you were back then on your foil.
Definitely. Yeah. And with that foil too, it's like the bumps in the Kiwi channel, as you know, they're so fast and they're so lively, and that foil was so slow. I couldn't even keep up with the bumps. So I was like constantly like hopping off one and like trying to like get on the back of another, versus last year I was on a much faster foil, a lot smaller and a lot more kind of high performance. And the trick is like to have a lot less kind of, you know, curve in the wing to help with speed. And I could stick with the bumps for the first time during that channel, which for me was like, the race was already made. I was like, I don't care what happens. It was exactly.
This last year?
I also moved a lot down in board size too, which helped a lot. I think the smaller volume, it does suck at the end when you're paddling on a much smaller board.
Like prone paddling upwind.
Exactly. For me, I like put my head down. I'm like, wow, maybe I should start prone paddling after this. I'm like, every time I was getting pounded surfing at my home breaks before, I was just to myself thinking, I'm like, this is going to help me at the end of M2O. So it was really cool to kind of, you know, get to be a part of the evolution of foiling. And yeah, that was me training. And then I had, you know, the privilege to train with Kai and Cody, which was awesome.
There's a team there.
And it was so cool. That's the team. That was, I don't know if you've ever done a K&I run from Maui, but you can see behind me in that picture, it's really glassy.
Yeah.
That run was quite an adventure. It's a 25-mile downwind run on Maui, which I think is one of the longest ones you can do. It's pretty much halfway to Hana. So it's like, you know, it's well above Maliko. And that run, we started off, it was brutal. There was absolutely no wind. you know, if you could get up on a bump, and it was grueling because if you get stuck out there and you can't get up, it's just sheer cliffs. There's no way you're getting out of the water. So pretty much if you're stuck out there, you're paddling on your stomach or standing up for 15 miles until you can get to a beach before it opens back up. So that was something that Kai and Cody dragged me into, which at the end of the day, I'm grateful for it, but it was at the time I'm like, I really think I'm about to get stuck like 10 miles out at sea and no one's around to help me. But it was an exciting run to say the least.
And it would have made you, it would have probably got you prepared for that Molokai crossing as well, because
exactly,
that last
yeah.
little section is not much good. But unless you're like Kai and you can pump through that full final section, it does take a little bit of time to get through.
He is brutal. I don't know how he does it. I think he's literally superhuman in that sense, as the same sense that you can paddle flat water as fast and for as long as that you do.
Yeah, I guess you got to enjoy your certain little things in life. But
exactly.
you finished Molokai last year, and you obviously broke the record that you probably set the year before. How fast did you go this year? We're in 2019.
Yeah, so, okay, so like 2018, I was 5 hours and 20 minutes exactly. And then last year, I was 3 hours and 20 minutes exactly. So I actually ended up cutting 2 hours, perfectly 2 hours off my time. And the crazy thing was, I had written it down. Like, I love to always kind of like, you know, write out my goals for the year, just kind of put them out there and kind of start, you know, envisioning them. And one of my main goals was to cut 2 hours off of my Molokai to Oahu time. And for me coming in and being like, looking at my watch, and like, I literally did exactly that. It was really cool. You know, it was like all the hard work and time and testing equipment and, you know, suffering it out with Kai and Cody, you know, to see it kind of all come in and, you know, get that final goal to me was really cool. Cause right now I'm hoping it'll change in the next few years. I don't have any other girls to compete against. So I was not only racing the guys, and it was nice to kind of battle it out with some of them, but also just kind of, you know, I was battling myself more than anything else to try and beat, you know, Annie from a year ago, and to try and, you know, just see how much I can smoke myself and see how much my equipment's improved and, you know, how much I've improved. And I did a lot more training last year than I did the year before. I mean, we were doing 3 harbor runs in a day, and then we'd go and flat water paddle, and just, you know, we were putting in the time. And I think we all kind of learned, all the foilers, just how much, you know, time and effort you can put in to really improve your equipment and, you know, your foiling too.
And when you're talking about doing flat water paddling on, were you flat water paddling on your foil, or your flat water paddling on the
flat water paddling on the sup too, which I think helps in turn, just because when you are paddling up
enjoyable.
And you're trying, no. I mean, I'm sure people do it, but for me, no, it was like flat water paddling just on my race board, just because I'm like, it's nice to think most of the sports that I do, they kind of in turn help each other. So the racing I did helped me when I was paddling, and the foiling I did helped me, you know, if my legs ever got shaky on a sup board, it's like, you know, they got stronger foiling. So it was kind of nice to see all of it help. No matter what I was doing in the water, usually it paid off in one way or another for my other sports too, which makes it a lot easier to spend time in the ocean.
Yeah, and it is quite incredible how leg intensive foiling is. Like, I know for myself, especially if like I'm having a bad run and I fall down a few times, I have to get back up, and you're sort of doing that pumping, you're trying to get the foil back out of the water, especially when you're testing and the foils are like obviously all different.
Exactly.
You're trying to find the sweet spot, like some are like more heavy on the back foot, some are more heavy on the front foot, like depending on where you put your mask is like makes a massive difference. And there's so many of those factors you got to take into account. But yeah, geez, I sort of knew it would be leg intensive, but obviously as you get better, it's a little less leg intensive. But how do you make sure that your legs are going to be able to handle that 32 miles? Because do you ever get cramps and stuff over that distance?
Yeah, well, actually for me, it was the first year I did it, my legs got cramps. And at the very end of the race at China Wall, I literally was on my board, like stretching out my feet and like my legs, like trying, like hitting them, like trying to get everything to like work itself out. And then last year, it wasn't that bad, actually. I didn't get any cramps, which was really nice. I think it was also partially because I stayed up for the entire, I fell once at the very beginning, and then I got back up and I stayed up for the entire time. So I think when you don't really, you know, when I was gliding and I didn't have to like forcefully push myself up when I fell, I think that saved so much energy for me that I didn't really cramp out that much, which was nice. Because, you know, the thing with downwind foiling that I think you know is if you're hurting when you're foiling, coming down and having to get back up is going to be way worse, just because you have to exert so much more energy to get yourself out of the water. So I think for me, not having to come down 10 times like the year before and staying up, it was such an improvement that it felt like, you know, a knife through butter. It was like a warm knife through butter. It was like so nice and easy. And fortunately, I didn't deal with cramping that year, but I definitely suffered from it the year before.
Yeah, it's definitely a painful experience when you get cramping over in that Molokai Channel. I think I fell off my board about 20 yeah. times in that final couple of hours. I'm like just cramping everywhere, and I was trying to get back on, and I was like locking up. My abs would lock up and my legs would lock up, and it just wasn't a very good experience. But I can imagine that you wouldn't be doing much foiling if that happened. So it must be obviously a big training block that you do before you lead into something like that, because otherwise you're not going to be able to finish that successfully. Talking about different events that you do and different sports that you get involved with, I know you've obviously been very heavily involved in stand-up over the past couple of years. You've raced in Japan and New York and Paris and all these different places. You've had some standout races in the Gorge as well. Like you finished second there twice behind, I guess, the queen of the Gorge, Fiona.
She's amazing.
Yeah. So how has it been, obviously, racing on that international scene over the last probably 2 years? You're obviously getting more and more success as you go along.
Yeah, it's been really cool. I think the beauty of SUP racing is there's so many different sides to it. Whether you love flat water long distance racing, or you love the sprinting, or you love the downwinding side of it, I think there's kind of a niche for everyone, which is really cool. And for me, I found that I loved the downwinding and I loved the sprinting, and I've been working on the flat water paddling. But it was, you know, it was really cool because I came from Maui, you know, only downwinding. I would never consider going flat water paddling for entertainment or for something to do. And then I, you know, started doing races that were flat water, and I was like, okay, this is fun. This is something I want to do. This is something I want to train and to progress in. And I just kind of slowly made my way, and there started being fewer and fewer downwind races, and I started focusing more and more on the flat water stuff. And that kind of brought me more into like the spotlight, just because there weren't a lot of huge, really popular downwind races other than like Olukai and M2O, but there were a lot of the flat water races. And so I think kind of as I started competing more in those, I made more friends and connections in the paddling world, and that just kind of, you know, pushed me to get to that point of competing on the top level even more. And from there, it just kind of, I worked my way up. And then finally I was competing against girls like Fiona and Candace and Seychelle and, you know, the powerhouses that they are. And I was so intimidated when I first started racing against them, because for me, I'm like, you know, I was really small and I was young at the time. And I'm like, they've been in this for, you know, so long, and they have so many years of experience over me. It's like, there's no way I'll ever be competitive with them. And so I think the first year that I ever got second at the Gorge, and I think I'm a product of my environment, which is why I thrive more in downwind conditions. For me, that was kind of like an eye opener, like, okay, like if I put my head down and train at this, I can be competitive with them, which was really cool. Because it's not really something you necessarily saw happening. I always thought I'd kind of be, you know, in the fifth and sixth place positions. And so more than ever, I'm fired up to kind of see how far I can get. And if one day I can beat the queen of the Gorge, and I can, you know, win a flat water race, which for me, I think it's so far out of my comfort zone, or it was when I first started paddling, that it would be really special if I could kind of put my head down and train enough so that I win a race like that, which is something I never really thought I'd put so much time into. So yeah, I think it's really cool kind of how there's so many different sides of racing and how there's something for everybody into it.
Yeah, there is just so many different aspects of racing in stand-up paddling. You got like the technical racing, the sprinting, the downwinding, the course races, the flat water, like the upwind, the downwind, the sidewind. There's basically a exactly. race for anybody. And it's, I think that's what's so special about the sport, is you can paddle it out through the surf in Maui or at San Francisco when you're doing heavy water.
Exactly.
Or you can paddle in a flat water lake in the middle of Germany, or you can paddle it wherever you like. You can paddle it down rivers. Like I see people doing that these days as well. So
yeah,
it's just an amazing sport, and you can surf it, you can paddle it, and you can just be a part of the water, whatever massive body of water is around you. You can get
exactly.
involved in it, which just makes it really,
so
really
accepting,
special.
Which is cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And you obviously finished, I think you finished second in the New York sprints last year in the APP. Is there any other big results that you've had on that sort of like world tour like level? Or is it mainly the Gorge and that result?
I had in Paris, I won the sprints in 2018. I believe, which for me was probably one of the bigger accomplishments. It wasn't a pool, which was new for everybody in it.
Yeah.
I think we all showed up at the boat show, like thinking like we're going into a room, like we're going into a huge warehouse. to race. I'm like, I've never done this before. This seems kind of counterintuitive. Usually you're out in nature, out in, you know, the water, you're out in the elements, but versus going into a huge warehouse with hundreds of other people and crazy boats everywhere, it was wild. And so that for me was really cool because we were literally racing in a pool. It's never something I thought I'd be able to say I did, but I'm really glad I did it because it's such a controlled environment and you really get to put so much focus into what you're doing and you don't have to worry about a wave hitting you from the side, but all you have to do is just put your head down and focus on getting to that buoy, turning around and coming back and doing it again. So it was something new that I hadn't experienced much of, but it was really fun and I'm really happy that I ended up taking it that day. And I think, you know, it was so close. It was me and Shay at the end of it and she's so fast. It was, you know, it could have just as easily been her, but I think on that day I just had that little edge over her and it was really exciting to kind of compete on a level that close.
Yeah, and Shay ended up winning that world title in 2018, didn't she?
She did, yeah. So yeah, I think
so it would have been really nice. Yeah.
Stick. I don't feel that bad.
But it would have been nice to obviously get that win over that world champ that year. And there's obviously like a lot of things that you're going to be able to achieve over the next few years because you're only still young, you're only 18. But thinking about those things that you are achieving, I know you've gotten into wing foiling. How has that experience been? Because it looks really cool. Something I haven't tried yet. I have got a wing foil on the way because I can't help myself. But how has that whole experience been? Like I see you doing big airs on your Instagram. And you're obviously getting involved with all the guys there on Maui. Like how has that been for you and why are you loving it so much?
Yeah, it's so fun. It's something I got into, I think, last August or so. I saw it for the first time. I'm like, this is weird. Like I had no idea what to expect, but I tried it and it was super fun. And at the time we were on really big supboards just because that's just kind of what everyone learns on. And then we've since then worked our way down to the prone boards that we foil surf on in the waves. And we put foot straps on our boards, which is exactly like that. So
yeah,
that's actually my old supboard I used to have. I used to downwind foil on that and it has foot strap inserts in it, which is nice. And so that's what I first learned kind of winging on. And, you know, eventually you get planing and you get up and going and, you know, you go to a certain speed. And I remember watching a video of Kai. I think he was one of the first people to kind of start working on airs with winging. And I was like, well, I want to try that. That looks really fun. And so I remember we did like a downwinder one day with the wing just to kind of go mess around with it. And yeah. I started playing with it and it just kind of clicked. It's so fun to have another wind sport to do when there's no waves on Maui. And there was actually a community of guys. It was like, it was Kai, it was, you know, Jeffrey and Finn and there's Zane and there were a couple of guys who were really good at it. And so it was super fun to kind of get to compete with them on a level like that. Everyone was so new in the sport that, you know, I was keeping up with the guys, which was really fun. And I was getting to kind of like, you know, head to head, which was really cool. So I think it's something that's so fun and also really accessible for a lot of people. Like if you can foil, it's, you know, you got it automatically. Like, yeah, this was a video from, of me jumping. It was, I think from earlier this winter. And like you see in the background, there were so many people we had out there doing it with us. It's a really fun kind of way to get on the water. And yeah. It's really fun. I highly recommend it if you haven't tried it yet.
Yeah, well, I'm going to definitely. I can't. I, as I say, I can't help myself. I have to get involved in new sports all the time. And,
exactly.
You got to test your limits. I can't actually. I don't know how to mute this. Do you know how to mute these videos? Because otherwise, I know you can't hear it, but I can hear it really loud. So then I can't hear you talk. It's quite funny.
Oh, I have no idea. I'm not sure.
But yeah, it looks pretty cool. Like obviously, the way you're getting involved and you're shooting high, and it must just be like such a different experience to be launching up like that. Did you do windsurfing as well?
So I haven't, no. So I can windsurf a little bit, but it's not what most people call windsurfing. I can like go in and out and kind of stay upwind, but it's nothing like you see, you know, the pros doing like Kai and those guys and Robbie. It's, you know, I can survive, but I don't think I'm a windsurfer. But I also, I can't really kite either. I've been learning actually the past couple of weeks. I've gone a couple of times and I'm starting to kind of figure that out, which has been really fun. But for me, not really having a windsport I know how to do, I had a lot of fun learning this because it was kind of the first thing I did with a kite/sail-esque type of piece of equipment. So it was really cool for me to kind of go and figure that out. And I went into it thinking like, there's no way I'll be able to figure this out because I have no background in any other wind sports. But I think it's definitely coming from a background of other water sports and from foiling, anyone who has that can figure it out. I mean, I think I figured it out in like 5 or 10 minutes, and for you it'll be the exact same. Like, you'll get on, you'll be like, okay, I foiled on this board before, and it'll just click just like that. So,
well, geez, yeah, I hope it's that easy.
It is. Plus, if you come to Maui, it's also easier because the wind's always good, and you know there's a good crew to do it with. But yeah, it's so fun too when like the wind's really light, and most of the other wind sports can't even go in the water because it's too light for them, and you can just go out on your supboard with a wing and pump yourself up and cruise around and like 10 to 15 mile an hour winds, which is so nice, which rarely happens here, but when it does, it's fun to have something to do.
Yeah, really. So that cool shots.
In that shot, that's when I moved down onto my prone board. So I believe that's a 4'2" prone board. It's like 23 liters.
Yeah.
And I have foot straps, which helped for sure. Like, when you're moving so fast, when you have a lot smaller board, you don't really catch on the water as much, so it helps you kind of gain momentum. And then when you're in the air, you don't fall out of the air quite as fast when you have something that's a lot lighter and easier to be pulled up with the wing.
Are you using longer masts on those now, or is it about the same, like around that 850, or I don't know how you say that in inches, but
yeah. So I pretty much, when I'm surf foiling, I use the 70 centimeter mast, which I believe is 20. I don't know. I think it's 70 centimeters. And then when I am downwind foiling, and then when I'm winging, I always use an 80 centimeter mast. I like a little bit longer just because it does help you. Like I said, like, it helps you make not mistakes, but it gives you a little bit more room for error. Like, if you're going really fast, you do hit a bump a little weird and you shoot up, you can save it and you have more time to catch yourself and get back down, versus when you're, you know, going on a smaller mast, you just yard sail, you fly everywhere. Yeah. And then this one was a picture of, this was me with my friend Olivia, and she was winging and I was doing a downwinder down the coast. And it wasn't even planned. We like ran into each other, which is so funny. It's like all the water sports colliding. She was shooting with a friend and I like went by them and waved and kept going.
Yeah. Nice. And so obviously you're obviously heavily involved in the surfing foiling as well. Like, there's some awesome shots here. What do you like better? Do you like the wing or the downwind, or you like the surfing? Like, which one do you like is the favorite, or is it just depending on the conditions?
I don't know. I think I'd have to say, I mean, this is the easy way out. I think I'd have to say it depends on the conditions. It's so hard to pick just one thing that I love, because I think, yeah, it is so dependent. If it's nuking wind and flat, of course I want to go wing foil. But if it is like the perfect small glassy size deal foiling, I think that's the go-to. This was a downwind I did with my friend. He was in a Speedo that day.
Yeah, I just noticed that. I was like, what is he doing? Was that a joke or what?
It was a joke, yeah. He does not wear Speedos. He thought it would be funny. We were teaching him how to wing foil, and he picked it up pretty fast. He's a really good kiter and surfer. We dared him to wear a Speedo, and he went along with it, which was really amusing for that amount of time.
Winging with friends in Speedos. And you're really starting to pick it up on the big wave surfing front as well. Like, you're really starting to push the limits there. What has that whole experience been like? Obviously, coming from stand-up and doing the foiling, and now it's sort of like taking it to that next level. Because I know a lot of people in Maui, like, I speak to Zane and Kai, and those guys will always look at Jaws as the pinnacle of water sports and the pinnacle of like being a waterman or a water woman in the grand scheme of things. And now you're out there surfing with these guys and getting pushed, and obviously you have a really good relationship with Kai, who's sort of one of the masters out there, as you can say. What has that experience been like, and how did you gradually push yourself up to getting to that point?
Yeah, well, I think it is like the ultimate kind of proving ground out there. This is like a whole other world away from foil downwinding and racing and everything. But it is, I first got into water sports in general when I was really little, surfing. And so I think it's been kind of my one true, you know, I love all the other water sports, but I think it's been the one thing I've really been gravitated towards no matter what. And when I was young, I did, you know, I heard stories about Jaws and, you know, the biggest wave in the world and how, you know, death defying it was, how scary and terrifying and how big it got. And I think the first time I ever got to go down there and watch it, it was like, you know, the first thought I had was, I want to be out there one day. And it terrified my mom so much. I think she still to this day hates the fact that I surf big waves. She's so supportive, but at the same time, I feel horrible because I think it definitely freaks her out. But
she's very happy to get the call at the end of the session going, I'm okay.
Exactly. I'm like, don't worry, I'm alive. But I think, yeah, so when I was young at the time when I saw those waves for the first time, I was nowhere close to being ready or prepared to be out there. But I kind of in my head created this like evil scheme. I was like, okay, well, I'm gonna go out there one day. So until then, we have some really amazing outer reefs on the Maui coastline, like on the North Shore. And that's a really good training ground for a place like Jaws. And the first time I ever had paddled out there, I think it was like 12 on the outer reefs or something. And I forced my dad to paddle out with me. He surfs a little bit. They're mostly longboarders. But he paddled out on a SUP board. I don't think he'd ever SUP before, just so he could sit in the channel and watch me, make sure I was okay. But I paddled out there and I was, you know, really intimidated at first because it was by far the biggest waves I've ever been in. And the kind of, you know, from then I started paddling out there with friends and I started pushing myself in bigger waves. And then I think it was last year, 2019 end of January, which was the first time I ever paddled out to Jaws. I have become really good friends with Paige Alms, who I don't know if she's, I think, one of the best big wave surfers in the world. Not just, she's also the female big wave world champ. She's amazing. And so I became good friends with her and she took me out there for the first time. And it was, you know, the first time I was on a jet ski watching those waves, I was completely hooked. I was like, this is what I want. This is, you know, I think it's like the ultimate feeling of like the adrenaline rush and just kind of chasing the like the most like raw and powerful feeling in nature you can get. I think that's kind of where I found it most and where I still find it most. It's just so unbelievable, like the feeling when you do pull into the channel after making a wave like that and just being out in that much power. It's really special. And so I think that's what kind of drew me towards those waves from when I was really little. And yeah, finally the day came where I had trained, I had gotten the equipment I needed from the boards to the pull vests to the inflation suits and leashes, and you know, it all kind of came together. And then from then, it was like the end of winter last year, so I didn't have many other opportunities to surf it. And then come the beginning of this winter, it was, you know, I focused so much on that. That's kind of what I put all my attention into for the remainder of 2019 coming into this year.
Yeah, it must have been a really cool experience. For some reason, it gets me excited even thinking about getting out there. It's a weird thing, obviously. You get excited about different water sports. And
exactly.
What is your, like, are you obviously training for that? What does training look like for big wave surfing? Like, is it breath hold stuff? Is it obviously staying fit? I know Kai says he likes to do stand-up paddling to keep fit for the big wave season. And mm-hmm. So what type of training are you doing to make sure that you're safe out there? And are you doing a lot of surfing on the shortboard as well?
Yeah, I shortboard probably, that's right now, like what I'm doing right now, it's probably what I'm doing the most. I think every time you're out on pretty much any type of watercraft, it helps. Yeah, for example, like Kai said, like during when you're, you know, doing flat water sprints and you're, you know, like kind of cross-eyed, you're dizzy, you're going into your 10th one and you're really feeling it. I think that really helps when you come into a huge wave and you're like looking up at something about to just like, you know, like a 4 or 5 story building about to break on your head. I think it helps to know that you've put in a lot of time and effort, not just in big wave surfing, but in all the sports. So I think any sort of cardio work you can get in is really nice. And the foiling helps too. So I think kind of any sports you can do in the water or out running, I run a lot to do that kind of stuff. They really help. And then also I do a lot of breath work, which is nice. Like before the beginning of the winter, I did a breath hold course. We went where they like drop a line 100 feet down and you get to like swim to the bottom and like hold your breath for a while and then come back up. So I think just kind of a little bit of everything helps in that sense for big wave surfing. And it's really nice also that like I kind of have different things going on year round versus a lot of the people in the surfing industry with big wave surfing. It's like, you know, winter season for us, that's your summertime. That's like the prime time. It's like we go, go, go. And then summertime, it really tapers off. And so there's not a whole lot of training you can do for big waves through big waves. And so exactly. So that's what I was talking about. I think I was swimming up from 100 feet on that one. So that really helps kind of with the pressure and just dealing with that feeling of not being able to breathe. And you get a gut feeling like, you know, this is really scary, I don't like this, and you kind of just have to learn how to like push that away and just tell yourself, you know, you've trained for this, you've spent so much time doing this that you're fully capable of surviving this. And I think it's just as much mental as it is physical at this point.
Yeah, because I know I did a little bit of breath training with Nan Baldwin on the Gold Coast when I was back hiking. Mm-hmm. I think he's worked with a few of the big wave surfers, and Yeah, I remember getting that, like, you obviously, like, you breathe all the way out and you go down and hold your breath for like 3 or 5 minutes or whatever it is, and you have those, like, your body,
the
like, I don't know,
convulsions.
You gotta, like, ignore them, and like, you gotta realize it's just your body, like, automatically reacting, and you don't actually need the air. And that was the biggest thing to get my head around, and I know that was super important for me when I was doing like events like heavy water, when those type of events did happen, and I got a two-wave hold down, and it was just like, oh, I was so happy I did that type of training to like first be able to relax in those type of situations.
Totally. I think it's so mental at that point. It's like, you really have to be able to tell yourself you spent so much time training, you got this part.
Yeah. And this is you, obviously, over the last summer, you just posted this video before you came on air. And obviously your shortboard surfing is progressing a lot. Like, I was watching, obviously doing a bit of research on you before I came on, and it looks like you're getting a lot more fluid and a lot better. This is obviously your big wave surfing that you're starting to get involved in. How is obviously dropping into those, and like, how are you gaining confidence by going out there?
Yeah, well, I think getting to go out there with Kai and those guys and watch what they do out there is really inspiring, and it really makes me kind of want to do what they do too. But I think you're going to feel comfortable. I don't think you're ever truly going to feel comfortable to place like Jaws. I think if you ever do, you've reached a level of like kind of insanity, because, you know, every moment you're out there, you're feeling, you know, you're on the line, the threshold of like, this is crazy. And like, you know, I can do this. There's like the balance in between. But I think at the end of the day, it's just putting your time in, always being out on the water, always being confident in what you're doing, you know, pushing yourself to the level, but also not making any crazy, stupid decisions. But I think, at the end of the day, it's putting your time in and being patient, because eventually a wave will come to you that, you know, you'll remember for the rest of your life. And I think that's kind of the main thing, is just being ready to, you know, play the waiting game, and also being ready to kind of, you know, take a couple on the head in the process.
And what's it like taking a couple of those waves on the head for those listeners out there who don't really understand big wave surfing, what it feels like to get just ragged off?
Yes, I mean, I think of it, it's like a giant, like, holding under your hand and just thrashing you around. It's something I've never experienced before. It's hard. I'm sure you felt it during Red Bull Heavy Water. It's like kind of an indescribable feeling.
Yeah.
But you are so completely, you're in your body, but you are so completely out of you cannot control what's happening to you at whatsoever at all. So I think once again, it comes into the mental side of it, because you're in there, you're in your head thinking like, okay, I'm underwater. I've been under for 10, 15 seconds waiting for you to pop up. And you're just getting thrown in every direction. Your arms being bent backwards, your legs are going in another direction. Like, you're attached to this huge board that's on your leg and you're hoping you don't hit it. So it's pretty crazy. So I think a lot of it's mental. You have to be able to hold on, and you're just getting thrown in every which way, and you have to be prepared to kind of, you know, hold on for dear life and hope you can come up in one piece and just kind of keep going. And for me, that was like the video that you just played. That was me wiping out in the Jaws contest, which was a couple months ago. And it was, I think that was one of my worst wipeouts. It probably wasn't my worst one, but it was it was entertaining for everyone to watch. I think my mom had thought I had died at that point because she was watching on the cliff.
And what's it? What are you enjoying more? The obviously you got the straps there, so you're towing in on a couple of these. Mm-hmm. But then you've obviously got
a paddle in
wave. Obviously, when you got lost and you fell off, and then you obviously had that one with Kai just then as well.
Yeah.
Which one are you enjoying more?
I don't know. It's really hard to choose. I think I've only really towed in on really windy days. For me, when paddling is not really an option, just because there's so much wind blowing up the face that if you even try to paddle, you're going to get blown off. So I think it really depends on the conditions. If it is crazy windy, towing is so much fun because it does really eliminate the, you know, the threat of getting like completely obliterated on the takeoff, and it lets you get into the wave early and kind of set up. But I think there's a lot of potential for towing, because it's really cool to be able to tow with people like those waves that you saw Kai tow me into them. And he has so much experience out there in that lineup, and he was the one. When you're towing, you're pretty much holding onto a rope, letting anything happen to you. You're not really in control. You're holding on for dear life, and you're hoping that the person who's driving the jet ski knows what they're doing. So that was really cool, because I kind of, you know, I trusted him to put me in the place I needed to be. And those were some of the most fun waves I got this winter, and I think they're probably the most memorable I've had. And then I think with paddling, that's what I first got into. Like, I never really got into this because I wanted to start towing. I think I really got into this because I watched Albie Lehr and Kai and Ian and all these guys who are just amazing. I watched them paddle into these waves. That's kind of what my heart is in, and getting to compete in the Jaws contest, which was paddling. I think there's a time and a place for it, but for me, that's probably my favorite right now, just because it is more challenging than the towing, but I think there's so much potential in that realm to get, you know, whether it's like a barrel or a wave or just a takeoff. But I think it's really tricky, but if you manage to be in the right place at the right time, it's the most amazing feeling in the world. And you've experienced that too. I know, I'm sure, like, you know, it doesn't even matter how big the wave is, but, you know, pushing your limits in the surf, like Red Bull heavy water or something like that, coming out the other side alive and stronger, it's rewarding in and of itself.
And there's your wipeout. How was that? Obviously you're live and
getting I'm in one piece still, which is nice. Yeah.
But that's obviously going to happen. That's part and parcel of it all.
Exactly. So I think if you're going to surf big waves, it's not the if, it's the when. Inevitably, you're going to fall. You're going to take a wave on the head that is, you know, that looks like you're not going to come out the other side. But I think for me, that specific wave, I went down the face and I got so much wind under my board that I airdropped into it. And my fins caught once, and then I did it again, and I just wasn't ready for it. So I ended up kind of tomahawking down the face, and the wave landed over me, which it actually wasn't as bad as I thought. Like, I'd opened my eyes, and there's a couple really funny pictures of myself. Like, my face is just completely, like, wide-eyed. Like, it looks like I am so freaked out at what's happening. But I remember the wave, like, landing on my head, and I pulled my vest, which is nice, because I think that's really kind of helped to revolutionize big wave surfing. Saved countless lives. But I was getting paddled, I pulled my vest, came to the surface. But for me, it wasn't the first wave that I fell on, but actually the second wave of the set. I was in like the worst place, and the thing landed right on my head. And that's crazy, because you're just sitting there. And I think the jet skis had tried to come and pick me up, because, which is nice at Jaws, there's big wave rescue. They'll either grab you by the hand, or they'll give you some sort of like loop or rope to hold on, and they'll drag you on the sled. But they either couldn't get me, or I missed their, like, their grab. And so I was like there just waiting. And it feels like what's 5 seconds feels like 20 minutes. Like, you're like floating in the water, your vest is inflated or it's partially inflated, and you're just kind of waiting. You're like, I am so at the mercy of Mother Nature right now. I can't do anything. Can't swim out of the way. No one's going to save me. You're just kind of waiting for this huge mountain of water to come run you down. I think that's really where the mental side of things come into this, where it's like, you just have to tell yourself, like, okay, every single second I've spent in the water up to this point is, you know, it's taught me lessons I need to get through this. And, you know, the breath hold training I've done, and, you know, you just kind of have to go into it thinking like, you know, I've got this, I'm going to come out the other side. And yeah, for me, that's one of the like main things that I think I need to work on in big wave surfing, is just being ready for not being ready, but being, you know, willing to accept what other Mother Nature throws at you. I think that's kind of the crucial thing, because when you're in waves like that, anything can happen, and you kind of need to be mentally prepared for anything that's going to happen too.
Yeah, it's obviously cool to hear. Obviously, you're very passionate about it. You're pushing the limits with a lot of the girls on Maui, and trying to test the limits. And everyone flies in for those type of swells. What was it like competing in that contest for the first time and getting that recognition to say, okay, like, here's Annie Reichardt. She's on the scene. She's pushing the limits, and she's doing awesome.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me going into it, I had absolutely no expectations. Like, of course, one day my goal is to win that contest, and I have other goals for that wave, but I had absolutely zero expectations. You know, I wanted to go into it. For me, my mentality was, you know, if I don't feel comfortable up there, I'm not going to go out. Like, I was so honored to be invited to it. I was actually shocked I got invited in the first place, just because, you know, there are so many amazing girls out there who surf big waves, and I didn't really feel worthy, because I had surfed Jaws like 3 or 4 times before that event. And I was like, you know, there's Paige Alms, and there are these girls that have spent so many years out there, and like, I don't feel ready to be up against them. And I think that was like partially self-doubt, like me kind of telling myself, like, you're not ready for this. But, you know, deep down, it's all I've ever really wanted to do is be out there. And so when I got the call, they're like, yeah, you're invited to do the event if you'd like to. You know, the only thing that came into my head, there was absolutely no doubt. I was like, yes, of course. And so it was really being, you know, it was amazing getting to watch my idols, the guys surfing in those heats, like from the back of a jet ski, seeing them surf the waves that I've watched from a TV for so many years since I was so young, and then getting to surf in Keith with girls that I've looked up to forever who have mentored me, as Paige taking me out there for my first time. We were in the final together, and she actually ended up winning it. So I think it was such an amazing day to kind of be out there with people I've idolized and looked up to for so long and get to compete against them and just share the lineup with them. And just the fact that I got to kind of be out there and I had the opportunity to compete at Jaws, because one of the biggest things I think for Jaws is you go out there on a glassy good day for paddling and there'll be 70 guys in the lineup. And in this instance, there were only 6 other girls in the lineup, which was so special. I think it's a really unique thing that you only get to experience once a year if you do have the opportunity to get invited. So, you know, I'm so grateful that I had the opportunity to be out there and just kind of feel the power that that wave has. It's an infectious feeling. I think I've kind of got the bug now.
Yeah, you look really excited when you're just talking about it. And when you're talking about going out there with 70 guys and there's only like a few girls out there, like, what is that experience like? Obviously, you got really awesome support team out there. Like, you obviously got like a lot of the big names that are in the surfing mm-hmm. world that like tend to like have a lot of respect for you. But what's it like still going out there? Is it a bit intimidating? Obviously, you've got to find your wave and you've got to like pick the right one at the same time. And there's obviously like skis going around and lots of different guys taking off in different areas. Like, how do you manage that whole situation?
Yeah, it's incredibly intimidating for sure. Cause I think I'm still so new into all this. Like, I'm such a rookie in all this. I know I talk about it and I love it so much, but this is like my first season of like really officially surfing Jaws versus people who've spent years and years and years out there learning everything they can about that place. So I'm still so novice and new to the entire scene. So yeah, paddling out of the lineup with, you know, in my opinion, the world's best surfers versus me, you know, who's like so far down the food chain. It's really amazing. And they're all really welcoming and encouraging, which is something that I wasn't surprised, but it was just really cool to see how, you know, welcome they were and how encouraging they were when I was out there. And they were like, yeah, like, you know, you put your time in, it's cool to see you out here. And I think a lot of that has to do with kind of the Maui big wave community too, because out of place, there's going to be so many people who are visiting who come to surf Jaws, but at the same time, there's a lot of people in the lineup that, you know, you've surfed down the road with your entire life and you get to see them out in the lineup. And there's a lot of camaraderie in that sense versus, you know, whether it's like you're sitting in the lineup with them or there's someone on the jet ski ready to come and rescue you when you fall on a wave. So it's cool to see kind of the entire surf community on Maui come together when a swell like that does happen. And it's really amazing to kind of see all of that happen and how the gears turn. And it's wild to be out there in the lineup when there are so many good guys and I'm sitting out there like questioning, like, do I really deserve to be out here with, you know, the world's best surfers? But, you know, it's nice enough I've been welcomed into it. And I'm so grateful that I've kind of been able to experience that, you know, the little bit that I have been.
I'm sure you're going to get a lot better as well. And you're going to get a lot more respect because you do have that energy. You're excited and you want to do it. So I think there's going to be a lot of good stuff coming over the next few years. But talking about heavy water just before, what was that experience like? Because it's kind of similar, but not the same at all, because you've got to do a 6-mile paddle under the Golden Gate Bridge through a whole bunch of currents. I know this year was quite hectic. You had fog, mm-hmm. you had like a massive head current. I didn't go, which I'm kind of in a way happy I didn't in the end.
You dodged sound like a bullet, really, let me tell you that.
Yeah, it sounded like a really tough race. It took you like 2 hours maybe to get around to Land's End, I think it's called, and then you had to come into Ocean Beach and you're supposed to go in and out a few times. And I guess you couldn't get out because it was just too big and too gnarly and people couldn't see and it was just a bit crazy. How was that experience? Because it just must have been. I've done it once and I'm very fortunate to be able to say that I've done it. And it was just really hard that year. But like, we could still see. It was big and it was a long race. But we got out and it was really, really tough. But I can't imagine what it was like this year from what I've spoken to the people who did it. It must have been a really challenge, really big challenge.
Yeah, well, it was wild. It's like, you know, I'd heard stories from you and Kai and all the guys there, you know, from Jimmy, and they were saying like how gnarly the wave side of it was. And I was like, okay, like I'm going to train breath hold, all this stuff, yada, yada, yada. But for me, the most grueling part of that race was actually the distance race, which I think no one expected going into it. It was really funny. We got there and I think everyone kind of looked at the water like the day before and it was like nuking wind. It was so windy and we were supposed to be going upwind of the direction of the wind, which we first was kind of like, oh, that might not be the best thing that's happening right now. But we ended up starting the race. And I think the biggest problem is probably the current. That was like the initial kind of shock of the whole thing, is we knew it was going to be bad, but we had a delay in the start time. So I think it was 2 hours later than it was supposed to be, which made the current a lot worse. I think it was like 6 to 8 knots up current for us, which put a lot more strain on your muscles and on just kind of, you know, I think it put a lot more distance of paddling in than it should have been without the current. So yeah, I expected the battle to be at the very end of the race, but in reality, it was the entire way. Like, I had this mentality of like, okay, just, you know, completely zone out and gruel out the flat water part, like whatever, doesn't really matter. Like, you'll get it done. You'll just, you know, put your head down and, you know, tune out everything else. But in reality, that very quickly, I realized that my mentality was not, it evaporated completely. I was like, that's not going to stick anymore. So you started the race and immediately it was like the current was just ripping. And I was like, okay, this is going to be a lot worse than I think it's going to be. And then we got to the waves. And then right after we went under the Golden Gate Bridge, the fog like completely set in. And it's an eerie thing, because for me in Maui, there's no fog anywhere. Like, I know in San Francisco, it's a pretty normal thing. And I think paddlers who live in California, they experience it, but I had never experienced anything like that, especially being so far off the coast that you literally don't know which way is land and which way is open ocean, like the Pacific Ocean. That was pretty wild for me, because I was out there and I think it was like, I don't remember exactly how far the course was getting up to like the part where like Ocean Beach, where you start going through the waves, but it was brutal because it got really cold too. And I remember like by the end of it, I had booties on, which was nice, but my like feet and my hands and like my lips and my nose were completely numb by the time I got to the beach. And
I was with
Tareen and I maybe Fiona, one other girl, for a while. And we were kind of sticking next to each other, and then we all got separated after a while. And we all like hit this, there was this one place where the current was, it was the worst current I've ever seen. I swear it was like if it was like in a river form, it would have been like full on rapids. But I think Fiona and Tareen got stuck in the rapids behind me, and I kind of shot forward and made it through. And I was completely alone at this point. There were like a couple guys off in the distance, but other than that, like I was completely alone. So it was pretty a freaky feeling, because I had no idea which way was the beach and which way was the ocean and which way I was supposed to go, until I finally hit a boat and they told me like, okay, that's the beach, you need to go that way, that's where the buoy is. And I was like completely paddling blind, and yeah, at that point I was like, oh my gosh, I just survived like the craziest race I'd ever done, and I hadn't even hit the waves yet. So for me, I completely forgot about going to the surf. I was like, oh my gosh, that was crazy, like I thought I was gonna get lost at sea, I had no idea where I was going, I could bat like there were points where I was going backwards because the current was so strong. And then I was like, oh, and now I have to go through death-defying surf on a race board perfectly. So I did that and I got to the beach. I think I caught a little wave, and it was crazy because you could barely even see the waves through the fog. You could just see kind of like in the distance, these like huge roller monster things coming at you, and you couldn't tell if it was a wave until it was like on your head. So I made it to the beach, and I remember getting there and like, I saw Cody Kerbox and James Casey and Connor and all these guys, and they were still trying to get back out. I was like, oh gosh, like if, you know, I kind of thought everyone was going to be done by now, but they're like, no, we just got to the beach and we're trying to get back out. And so, you know, very quickly I realized like, this is going to be a lot harder than I think it is. And, you know, with the fog and with the fact that I had no feelings in my hands or feet, and the current being so strong, it made it really hard. And the swell was just coming so consistently too. There were like no gaps in any of the swell. So it was pretty wild to have to deal with that. And at the end, I think they called it off. Like I had been trying to get through the surf for like 30 or 40 minutes. And then they finally canceled the event, because I think at the end of the day, like they have to call it off at a certain time. We were still fighting to get back out, but it was wild. I wish I had made it through the surf, but at that point I was so taxed and so tired. I don't know if there was any way I was actually going to finish that race.
Did I think Casper and Arthur and those guys had finished the race in the end?
Yeah, a couple people did. Yeah,
it was only like the top five guys I think maybe finished, and the rest of them were like pulled out because it just got too hectic because of the fog and because of the swell.
Exactly,
and
you couldn't see. Yeah.
And obviously everyone was very tired and cold, so just so many elements. It just would have been insane to do that race.
Yeah, it was there. Yeah, every turn, every corner, there was like another like huge obstacle in the way that you had to kind of come get over.
Yeah, but it would have been a very, very, very cool story to have now. And you can obviously tell that. And when you're out in big wave surfing, I'm sure that's one of those things you're thinking about going, oh, if I got through that, I can get through anything.
Exactly.
And so what's next for you? Like, what are your plans going forward in the next couple of years? Like, do you really want to be focusing on the big wave surfing, the stand up, the wing foiling, the foiling downwind? Or are you going to do a bit of everything? Like, how are you going to be able to manage all this different stuff? And what do you want to see yourself be able to achieve in the next few years?
Yeah, well, I think I kind of want to do everything because I love it all so much that, you know, I think every sport I do, from the flat water paddling to the winging to the big wave surfing to the foiling, I love it all for its own unique reason. I don't think I would ever stop doing one of them, just, you know, to do the other ones instead full time. So for me right now, it's kind of just like pursue like the whole water woman kind of side of it is, you know, depending on the season and the time of year, just to kind of put my focus on whatever sport, you know, is right for that time. For example, like the summertime is downwinding and the foiling, and then with winter time it's the surfing and the big wave surfing and towing. And so yeah, I think right now in the next few years I want to work on being the best big wave surfer I can be and developing the fastest foils I can develop and hopefully inspiring people along the way. And yeah, just kind of expand my horizons of being in the water and kind of getting to share it with people and just kind of seeing where I can take it from here and where it goes.
Yeah, that's awesome to be able to have that outlook and have the opportunity to be able to do that. I'm just going to share the other video that you have up here on your YouTube channel. It's called, what is your handle for your YouTube channel?
I think it's Annie Reichert.
Yeah. There is another Annie Reichert, but it's more of a cat lady, but we worked it out before we came on. So when was this video filmed?
This was, I believe this was last winter. So it was 2018 to 2019. So yeah, I believe I edited this video in like March of 2019, just at the end of last winter. So yeah, this was before, I think I would surf Jaws a little bit in the end of this video, but this was like just as I was kind of getting into the big waves and I had been spending a lot of time on the outer reefs. And yeah, this is kind of the first video I put together that I put on YouTube.
Do you have any ambition to get into like shortboard surfing as well?
Yeah, so I've competed a little bit in that. I think for the longest time I was like, you know, I'm not good enough to compete in the shortboarding. There are so many people that spend their entire lives working on shortboarding and they compete in it full time. And I have a couple really good friends who do that. And, you know, I think in my mind I was like, I'll never be good enough to compete with them. But I think I've been spending so much time doing it, I would love to one day compete in it. We'll see kind of how far I take it. But I, you know, just out of curiosity to kind of see how I could do, I would love to compete in it at some point. You know,
this is the Maliko run coming down on here.
That is, yeah.
Yeah.
That was so keep going, which was nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was, yeah. And this was just SUP stuff with the GoPro.
Yeah, it looks so fun. And this is obviously coming in towards the end when you're like coming through. Is this Sugar Cove here?
That is Sugar Cove, yeah.
Yeah, I remember I paddled out of there a couple of times. So I know that backdrop.
Exactly.
And this is the Maliko Harbour Gulch. Is that right?
Yeah. Gulch. I've spent a lot of time in that harbour.
Yeah. And this is on your 14 downwindy.
Mm-hmm. I think that's my 14 by 21 and a half, the NSP Carolina board.
Nice. Yeah. And will you ever do the Carolina? Oh, here's Jaws. Here's your last.
Yeah, that was my first session out there. It was my first wave ever. I was a party wave with Paige Alms, which was so special. I never thought, you know, that I'd get to share a wave out there with her, which was really cool. And yeah, I would love to one day do the Carolina Cup.
Yeah.
That is a race that I feel like it's the most kind of grueling races of all the races. So one day if I can work up the bravery to do that race, I would love to.
Yeah, for sure. Is there anything else you wanted to shout out to before we jumped off air? Like, is there any Instagram channels, YouTube, whatever? Throw them out there.
Yeah, if you guys want to follow me, if anyone's still watching me blab at this point, Instagram is AnnieStar, 2_2Rs. Yeah, but I just want to thank you so much for having me on and listening to me talk about nonsense for 2 hours.
Yeah, it's been awesome. Obviously, I know I find these chats are always really good because you actually get to see the person a little bit more. You get to like find out more about their journey. Like we always have those surface level conversations, like, hey Annie, how you going? Like we're standing in the coffee line at Paris, like at Nordic Crossing or whatever.
Exactly,
we're getting we're getting bagels and a coffee and talk to your mum a little bit, and then we go our separate ways. But it's actually cool to hear your passion and how excited you get over obviously your winging and your surfing and all those different elements of waterman or waterwoman that you're getting involved in. I'm sure you've got a very, very bright future. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. I know next time someone needs to interview you so we can get all the details too.
Yeah, for sure. And just everybody out there who has been watching and listening to the Boothcast, thank you so much for following along. If you can, if you want to watch it, you can check out Michael Booth on Facebook. There's a section there called Boothcast. And if you want to listen, check out iTunes or Spotify. It's called Boothcast. And please rate it, like it, subscribe to it, all that good stuff. And we can get this out to more people. So Annie, thanks again for your time.
Thank you.